Jai Ma. So we are on the last chapter, that is 24th chapter of the second series. And if you take it right from the beginning, then 48th chapter of Essays on the Gita. This is the last chapter. It's called Message of the Gita, the Message of the Gita. And in a way, it is a standalone chapter. I wouldn't use the word summarize because that's belittling it. It's very power-packed actually. One of the only problem is that if you read it only as a standalone chapter, unless one is already primed, it's very powerful and the words are very evocative. It does give us the essence of what Shri Krishna is saying to Arjuna. And before we come to the details of the chapter, just a little bit of summary. So, basically, action as a means of discovering the divine. Let's put it in very simple words. So, what was there before Shri Krishna's coming? Before Shri Krishna's coming, we have meditation and worship. So, we have meditation, which is there in the Vedic and Upanishadic literature, and we have worship, the Karma Kand. But with Shri Krishna's coming, something new gets added, which is hinted in the Isha Upanishad but not developed. And that is Karma. So work as a means towards discovery of the divine. So this is the basic essence of the Gita. So one may wonder that, well, okay, it is one of the means of discovering the divine. Fine, but one may follow the path of meditation and traditional bhakti. Shri Krishna says, yes, you can do that. But, and that is very interesting, work comes naturally to man. So in a way, it is naturally aligned with his nature. Because all our life, we are engaged in some work or the other. Even the man who meditates also engages in work. The second aspect is that this is more complete. Because meditation and worship tend to withdraw us from the outer life, from this engagement with the world. And we end up declaring it as an illusion. But Shri Krishna says that, well, all this world is itself a manifestation of the divine. Now, he's not telling us, he's not raising questions that we have when we look at it as a manifestation of the divine. That is left for Sri Aurobindo to answer. Sri Aurobindo says very clearly that, you know, it is a manifestation of the divine, incomplete manifestation of the divine. It is still going towards perfection. That is a question which is not raised by Arjun, and that's not a question which is answered in the Gita. But it is a manifestation of the divine. That hint we find here in the Gita itself. And in the process of manifestation of the divine, all the details of the divine as in the Shar, the ever-changing mutable world, the divine as the immutable reality which is untouched by all this outer world, and the divine as the Purushottama who holds in himself these two ways of being. So this is the total picture which the Gita is giving us, and it is possible only through works to realize this completeness. Because works means you are also in contact with this external world where with changing appearances. So it's a more complete path and a more perfect realization. It's the most natural path. So this is about the gospel of works. So it has basically three aspects to it. One is, first section is jnana. So first we must have the jnana, and knowledge in the Gita is not intellectual knowledge. It's not talking of scholarly knowledge. That's called as ignorance in Indian thought. So a person may give lectures, write books, but it doesn't mean it's knowledge. Knowledge is the knowledge of the one and the oneness. So this knowledge comes when we withdraw from surface appearances through the buddhi. That's why the yoga of jnana comes first, and discover the one within us, the one within the world, the one beyond the world, the one of whom the world is a manifestation. So Gita shows us the way to arrive at this knowledge. Having arrived at this knowledge, for the completeness of this knowledge, we must engage in works. Because what is that one divine doing with this world? So in that manifestation, we must participate. And karma is a means of participating in the manifestation. When we do it ignorantly through ego and desire, it's a bondage. But when we don't do it through ego and desire, but do it only and only and only a million times only to serve the divine, to fulfill the divine purpose, then it's not a bondage. It becomes not only a means of liberation, that's the minimum, but it also becomes a powerful means of helping in the divine work, participating in the divine work. There is something happening out here. We may or may not understand it. But it is the divine who is manifesting himself in this creation. When we act under the impulsion of ego and desire, we distort the whole play. And it's very easy to understand. Everywhere, the moment I put me, mine, then I am somewhere adding to the distortion. That's why the world has become what it is. So the Gita teaches us how to remove this distortion and how to become a pure and perfect, a free-flowing channel of the divine will. That's what the Gita teaches, very simple. And after these comes the crown. The crown is love. Why should we do all this? And that's where comes the gospel of love. So these are the three parts of the Gita, also known as the triple path. And the sequence is jnana, karma, bhakti. In synthesis of yoga, which we'll take up sometime later. So we have karma, jnana, bhakti. Sri Aurobindo puts it like that. And there is a reason, because works are the most natural. If you see the Gita, when it starts with jnana, Arjun has a question that, you know, why are you teaching me to fight and engage in action if knowledge is so important, knowledge is beyond all these frames, why are you asking me to fight? So Sri Aurobindo has, in synthesis of yoga, made it as works, knowledge, and bhakti. Bhakti is the crown. Love is the crown. And then he talks about the yoga of integral perfection, which is not there in the Gita, but the Gita lays the foundation stone for it. So this is the background. And with that, we can read some of the passages. This is the last chapter of Essays on the Gita. We'll finish it in two sessions. One we'll do today and the second one on 3rd of June. That's what we have thought about. Chapter 24 of second series, page 572, the message of the Gita. Chapter 24, second series, the message of the Gita. The secret of action. So we might summarize the message of the Gita, the word of its divine teacher, is one with the secret of all life and existence. Existence is not merely a machinery of nature, a wheel of law in which the soul is entangled for a moment or for ages. It is a constant manifestation of the spirit. This is so powerful. Completely removes all our mental cobwebs about the karmic idea, you are caught in a wheel, you have to somehow come out of it. No, action is a means to express, and very easy to understand. Like all action actually is a self-expression, whether we like it or not. We may do it mechanically, but it's a means to express what is inside me. So without action, in a certain sense, though I am complete, I am yet incomplete, because there are things inside, like an author writes in a book of poetry or a story, he writes what is in him. So action is a means to manifest the existence. But we have cut it off by saying that action is somehow a blind mechanism in which we are caught in the law of karma. We have to somehow get out of it. So Sri Aurobindo is laying it very clear that it is not the case. We'll read. It is from the Gita, but this is Sri Aurobindo is making it elaborating. Yes, naturally. He's not a pedagogue. We should be very clear. That's a good question. Sri Aurobindo is not a pedagogue, though his knowledge of Sanskrit will put the most greatest Sanskrit pundits to shame. Let me put that background. And I'm not going into it. One can read the way he has researched into Sanskrit, the way he has mentioned all the roots. So it is understood that Sri Aurobindo's knowledge of Sanskrit goes beyond just what people. Second, we must know that when Sri Aurobindo's Sanskrit it is Sri Krishna who gave him the Nirukta. The special Nirukta is the etymology of words. So that's how he could get that deeper sense of Sanskrit. So when Sri Aurobindo writes translations of the Gita, he's not following the standard pattern, but based on the deeper essence of or knowledge of Sanskrit. But naturally it is essays. So it is not a word by word one sloka in translation, but there is a lot of suggestions inside each sloka, inside the whole Gita. So he's bringing out that. So it's not translation here that he's saying. In fact, we'll see certain sections in inverted commas, which I'll read mainly. They're not translations of the Gita. If you read it carefully, it is like Sri Krishna telling us again in English, free-flowing. That's how it at least read to me, reads to me. So there is a reason why he didn't translate simply, though they are all exactly same thing. Because the Gita is given on a, we have spoken about it, on the battlefield. So there are just about 700 slokas, some would say 699. There are many suggestions which are not developed. So it is like Sri Krishna coming again and developing those suggestions in a quieter setting. It is there even in Mahabharata. There is a second Gita which Sri Krishna gives in the court of Yudhishthir. Because they ask him, teach, give us that teaching again. And he first asks Arjun, do you remember? He says, I'm sorry, I've forgotten. Something of that kind. He says, what, you forgot? Anyway, so in that sitting, he gives it again where he elaborates. So we can say that in today's age and our setting, Sri Krishna is giving us the Gita again. That's the best way to look at it. So, so if we look for exact this sentence, it won't be there. That existence is not merely a machinery of nature. Life is not for the sake of life alone, but for God. And the living soul of man is an eternal portion of the Godhead. So life is not just, you know, we take it very selfishly, my life, your life, I am caught up in life. No, life has a purpose. Existence, there is one existence, divine existence. All other existences derive from him. Life is a means to express, manifest, it's a force of the divine. So what will the force do? It'll do what the existence holds within itself. So life is not for the sake of life alone, but for God. So what about action? Action is for self-finding. This little sentence is something which should be imprinted, you know, because we have been hearing action is a bondage all through. Action is a bondage, action is a bondage. What is Sri Aurobindo saying? Action is for self-finding, for self-fulfillment. And it's so true. If so many things we discover simply because we act foolishly or we act wisely, or so we believe. But through that we discover something about ourselves. Even in ignorance this applies. So action is to discover. There is a prayer of the mother in prayers and meditation. Just about, I think, second or third prayer. Where she speaks of it. That why meditation, contemplation and action, they are complementary. When we act, we discover elements in us which resist. When we act, we discover that, well, what parts are aligned with the divine. So when we act, we discover ourselves and the world. So action is a means to discover the existence. How beautiful this is. So it's a means of self-discovery and not only self-finding but also self-fulfillment. Fulfillment of the divine will for self-realization and not only for its own external and apparent fruits of the moment or the future. So it is not self-fulfillment just that, okay, by action I'll get a good job and get money. It is the greatest self-fulfillment possible. It is the fulfillment of the divine within us, and the sign that we are in that process is that it gives peace, delight, and opens doors to the highest knowledge. So this is the background. Few lines below. Last 7-8 lines on the same page. So what is the command for us? First command is, know then yourself. Know then yourself, know your true self to be God and one with the self of all others. Know your soul to be a portion of God. Live in what you know. Live in the self. Live in your supreme spiritual nature. Be united with God and Godlike. This is a very power-packed statement. Then he will elaborate step by step. Live in what you know, live in the self, live in your supreme spiritual nature, be united with God and Godlike. This is the aim that has been put forth for us. What is the path? Again, we have a summary. Offer. Why there is so much ego? Offer. Offer. First, all your actions as a sacrifice to the highest and the one in you and to the highest and the one in the world. So action should be done as an offering, as a sacrifice to the divine, not for any praise, blame, not for impressing others, not for getting money, not for this or that. Understood. It is meant as an offering to the highest. Deliver last all you are and do into his hands for the supreme and universal spirit to do through you his own will and works in the world. This is the solution that I present to you, and in the end you will find that there is no other. We see the inverted commas close. So we can say Sri Krishna is saying this again as Sri Aurobindo, that this is the solution of the problem of life, world, action. Because we don't know what is our true existence, to find that existence, first we must use works to discover the one existent. Having discovered, we must express that through actions and find complete fulfillment. Yeah, it's okay now. We can come back. Then what is required for that? Page 573. So where is the link? Our existence right now is a very small, I mean, we identify ourselves as Mr. So-and-so, Dr. So-and-so, Miss So-and-so. This is how we identify ourselves. And we are told that there is a supreme existence, which is, we can only maybe try to conceive. So what is the link? The link is Shraddha. We cannot arrive there without starting with faith. And this faith is important in everything in life. See, we want to do something, learn medicine, learn whatever we want to learn. So there is a faith that we can learn it. There is a faith that there is a truth out there which we need to know, which we can know. And knowing this, our life will become better. So in everything, faith is required. So here also, the link between our present existence and the greater existence is faith. It starts with faith. Then it ends in knowledge and identity. So page 573, we have one of the Mahavakyas. It is what we see and believe with our whole active nature, ourselves to be, and our relations with the world to mean. It is our faith, our Shraddha, that makes us what we are. So very important, if we may live in Auroville, live in ashram, but may believe we are stupid people, we may be stupid, that's different. But the faith should be that in a sense we are divine. We are children of the divine. We are portions of the divine. And when we live with this faith, slowly this truth which is hidden inside will begin to unfold itself. That's the story of Prahlad and Hiranyakashyap. Hiranyakashyap's faith is based on appearances. That this is matter and I am the lord of this, king of this world. There is no other. I don't know God. I don't see God. Prahlad's faith is even in a solid pillar made of rock or gold, there is divine. You see, there are two different gospels of faith. And because he has such a faith, therefore we see ultimately the demon king cannot, he stands defeated. So this is the fundamental truth that is being revealed to us. The last line on this passage is, according as he lives in one or the other, He will be a mind dwelling in human ignorance or a soul founded in divine knowledge. So if I have this faith that there is nothing else except material world, except the human ego, life is meant to fulfill or satisfy desire, so will be my life. But if I have the faith that there is a truth here to know and a truth that is expressing itself, and I must become an instrument and channel of that truth, then whatever be my present imperfections, I'll end up into that. So this is what is the double faith he's speaking of. So in the first case, now we'll just skip this, but just to summarize, one kind of faith which normally we all hold is, I'm a creature of nature, tied to nature, bound by nature. My body is tied to certain laws, my mind to certain ways of thinking. My heart and life, my heart will naturally be attached to those whom it cares and loves. It's different that we may not even understand what is love. I have to earn money, I have to struggle because so is the way of life. So what is happening? I am bound by nature. My faith has bound me to nature. And therefore I have no choice but to live according to that. And I'll have no other law of life. So this is the first thing it describes. And within it, I may experience a certain degree of freedom, but it's actually a different freedom only of the will of the ego. But what we do not see, last two lines on page 573, his ego is itself a product of her workings, nature's workings. And as is the nature of his ego, so will be the nature of its will. And according to that, he must act and he can no other. So as I believe myself to be, so will be my actions. So that's where he is giving us the essence of the three qualitative modes, sattva, rajas, tamas. We have that nice little story of a man who is engaged in building a temple. I mean, we have Orville building. So there is a man who is walking by and he asks one person, what are you doing? He says, oh, I have to pick up these stones and carry. It's such a terrible work. It's so difficult and I don't know. Then he started all, see, some people are enjoying, some are have to carry. All this he started. And he was suffering, naturally, because that is tamasic mode. He asked another person, what are you doing? He is also doing the same thing, building the, taking the stones and placing it. He said, I am earning money. I am waiting. When I'll get a chance to go somewhere else where I can earn more money. He asked the third person who is also doing the same thing. He says, what are you doing? He's also lifting up stones and carrying it. He simply says, I am building a temple. And he's full of joy. So you see, these are three different modes. Same action. There is a story of someone who asked one of the sadhaks who was carrying a lot of plates in hand in the dining room for cleaning. So this person laughed at him and he says, oh, coolie, like that, coolie. Coolies carry, you know. His answer is very amazing. He said, yes, her coolie. Now you see, there is a double sense in it. Her, divine mother's coolie, not just coolie. Her coolie. And we also know that Hercules is the great legendary Greek demigod who did impossible tasks. So it was an amazing answer that it's the state of consciousness in which we do, which is much more important than the actual act. So this is the first lesson we get. And then he says that there is, however, something in man's, next page 574, there is, however, something in man's consciousness which does not fall in with the rigidity of this formula. He has a faith. So I may be doing something very external, whatever it be, but my faith may be that I am Hercules. So, which grows greater as his soul develops in another and an inner reality of existence. So it's what you are doing is not so, is has its importance, but much more important is the faith and the consciousness in which you are doing. There's a famous story of Saint Bulesha. He was picking up, removing the weeds, sowing the seed in his farm. And, somebody goes and asks him. He says, you are a master, I believe. So he remains quiet. He doesn't say anything. He says, what are you, tell me, teach me about finding God. Now this man is busy doing it. And he again asks, teach me about finding God. He doesn't say anything. He kept doing. So he keeps waiting that perhaps he'll give me some mantra. After finishing his work, he'll take me into a private meditation room. There will be nice arrangement, good music, and then he will make us sit, do some chanting, and then give a mantra. So he waits, 8 hours he waits. Then he says, please tell me the secret of finding God. He says, don't you see what I am doing? He said, what? So he says, pick up from here and put it there. He says, what? He says, concentration, pick up from there and put it here. This is what I am doing. Picking up from one place and putting it another. So it's not about the work which we are doing, but the state in which we are doing. So this is the basic thing, the first thing required. And he says that our soul is hidden normally by the ignorance of inner things. We come to the page 575. Again, inverted commas. So as I said, these inverted commas are very interesting. You won't find them exactly corresponding to some slokas. Why has Sri Aurobindo put inverted commas? We can have our own understanding of it. My understanding is very simple. This is Sri Krishna speaking again to us in our present state, in the language we'll understand today. Nowhere he is writing, this is this particular sloka. That's why it is very fascinating. And here you will find many of these. This is the great change of and transfiguration, runs the message of the Godhead in man, the avatar, the divine teacher. He is now talking to us, not just to Arjuna. Arjuna is a prototype anyways of all of us. But he is talking to us as the Godhead in man. To which I call the elect. It's not a mass movement where all kinds of people are just enrolled and you make them sit together and say some story. And who is the elect? And the elect are all who can turn their will away from the ignorance of the natural instruments to the soul's deepest experience, its knowledge of the inner self and spirit, its contact with the Godhead, its power to enter into the divine. So this is the elect. This is, in a way, the word is used almost synonymous with initiation. It reminded me of a line from Sri Aurobindo's message. It's actually part of a letter he wrote to Motilal Roy. Because he wanted to create a kind of Sri Aurobindo movement, very big and all that. He says, I am not here to gather thousands of disciples or to create mutts, and you know, in English it reads like maths, but it's not maths, it's mutts. Somebody may read. Create mutts or have sannyasis. He says, I have come here to call the souls of the strong to the leela of Krishna and Kali. Souls of the strong. The yoga is not for the weakling. Na yamatma balhine na medha na bhuna shrutin. So this is where he is saying elect in that sense. Not elect in terms of outer qualification or money or anything. So he is qualifying. Who is the elect? The elect are all who can accept this faith and this greater law. When we read the ashram's trust deed, the first thing, that sentence that is written here, this ashram is meant for those who have faith in the teachings of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. It starts from there. Then yes, you have freedom, you have evolution in its own way. But here faith means that this is what you are here to do. It is difficult, maybe very difficult, maybe seemingly impossible. And yet this is the faith of man, one day it will realize itself. So these are the elect. It is difficult indeed to accept for the human intellect attached always to its own cloud forms and half-lights of ignorance and to the yet obscurer habits of man's mental, nervous and physical parts. But once received, it is a great and sure and saving way because it is identical with the true truth of man's being. And it is the authentic movement of his inmost and supreme nature. Why this is identical with his true truth? This is what is happening all the time. God is working in us and through us in this whole creation. He is expressing himself. So what are we doing? We are doing the great distortion. That's all. It's like the teacher wants us to draw something. And I feel maybe I should do it this way. We are not straight instrument, clear instrument, free instruments. We are always bound to our own formulas. So when we do that, we distort. We are always bound to the egoistic demands. We are always bound to desires. And therefore we distort the whole truth. So he qualifies what we are here to do. So how to do it? Again, we see inverted commas. But the change is a very great one. Again, these are not, though it's very interesting, they are inverted commas. But they are not sentences from the Gita. You won't find sentences like that. And yet he has put it in inverted commas. Something very fascinating. If you observe it, it's very fascinating. But the change is a very great one. The next line, there will be needed a complete consecration of yourself and your nature and your life to the highest and to nothing else but the highest. For all must be held only for the sake of the highest. Nothing accepted except as it is in God and a form of God and for the sake of the divine. There will be needed an admission of new truth, an entire turn and giving of your mind to a new knowledge of self and others and world and God and soul and nature. So it's why it is difficult. Difficulty is that we are used to living life in a certain way. We want to admit God, but on our terms. But here it's the reverse. We have to admit ourselves into the kingdom of God where God's terms reign. God's terms are slay desire, finish the ego. These are the terms. There is a nice couplet in one of Kabir's poems that ye to ghar hai prem ka, I'll say in Hindi then translate. Ye to ghar hai prem ka, khala ka ghar nahi, sheesh katai bhui dhare, tab baithe ghar mai. This is the house of God's love. It's not the house of your aunt or uncle or your known people. Okay, fine. So what is required? He says there is a condition required to enter and sit in this house of love. What is the condition? Cut your head, ego. Keep it on the side, outside. Then you walk inside. Sheesh katai bhui dhare. Keep it on the ground. Then you walk inside. Tab baithe ghar mai. So you see many gestures which come spontaneously in certain practices in the Indian culture. Many people don't understand why everybody is bowing down at the samadhi. Mother explains. Or when you do sastang pranam. It's not a mechanical thing. If you do it mechanically, then nothing comes. That's understood. But it's a gesture that I bow down before the Supreme. Whatever I may be. Whoever I may have been. It's irrelevant. Right now, this head, which is the seat of ego, I am offering at your feet. Mother would make it, put your head in her lap, making it easier. Or completely I am surrendering myself to you. That gesture contains this meaning. Then it has a meaning. But if we do it just mechanically, it's a different thing. So that is the whole idea. Next paragraph. There will be needed a will that shall make this new knowledge, vision, consciousness, a motive of action and the soul motive. How powerful this is. So what is the new knowledge? That the divine alone is all. His will alone counts. He alone knows. So what is the will should do? That knowledge it must fulfill in life through acts of service. This is the whole idea. Page 576, second line from above. There will be needed an uplifting of the heart in a single aspiration to the highest. You see, this knowledge and will must go together. It's not enough that we say, yes, yes, I have read all the works of Mother and Sri Aurobindo. I have given lectures, I have heard talks and all this. But I don't want to put it into practice. People say often that, you know, sometimes people say, but what is the practice? Actually, it's nothing else but trying to fool the divine. Everything is there. We don't want to put it into practice, therefore we use this kind of a cloud. I don't know what we should do. It's very clear. Surrender the ego, slay desire. We want by practice some kind of sitting technique of meditation. Though Sri Aurobindo has told that also. But so, knowledge and will must go together. You can't dissociate. So that's what he is reminding us. How? By a single aspiration to the highest, a single love of the divine being, a single God adoration. So this is the yoga that is being given to us. What will be its impact on our everyday life? We will come to that a little later. But basically it should be a one-pointed turning in a complete aspiration and consecration to the divine and the divine alone. Nobody else, nothing else. And yes, as the divine truth reveals itself through countless creatures in countless creatures. So what is this divine? Page 576, last two lines. The divine whom you have to seek, the self whom you have to discover. Because we may use the word divine in countless ways. And we have all Shiva, Krishna, Brahma, Vishnu, all the gods are there. And impersonal, personal. I was reading, hearing in the camp one of the bhajans of Kabir, great mystic. Bhajan is that Guruji main to nirgun ke gun. I want to go only to Niranjan. The one who is beyond this creation. But this is also a limitation. The totality of the divine is that and this both. That's the formula Mother gives in the agenda. What is needed is this and that. It's not this or that. Very simple. Either this world or divine. No, this and that. The significance of world is only because of the divine presence and manifestation. Nothing else. So that is what he is reminding us. What is the divine? The supreme soul of whom your soul is an eternal portion. First is, we have a relation with the divine. Our true relation. Who is he? Our father, mother, teacher, friend, beloved, lover, everything. Why? Because we are a portion of the divine soul. Is simultaneously all these things. The divine is all these things. All that we see. Tree and stone and animal and human beings. Everything. Gods and titans. Four lines from on page 577. If he were solely the spirit mutable in nature, there would be only an eternal and universal becoming. So he basically reminds us of Shara, Akshara and Purushottama. Shara is divine only in nature, oh so wonderful. Yes, admire it, adore it. But he is also beyond nature in an impersonal silence. Discover that also. But beyond the personal and the impersonal, he is the Purushottama, the Lord of all existences, the Divine Mother expressing herself in countless ways. That too we must discover. So they don't cancel each other, they fulfill each other. So this is what he is reminding us. Okay, we'll just take out some passages. Page 578. Here is a description of what this divine is whom we are seeking. Page 578. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 lines from above. He is the supreme soul and all souls are tireless flames of this one soul. We have a link with him. The individual soul is not an illusion as the classical Advaita Vedanta says. It's only a practical thing. Ultimately, it's a last illusion. No. It's a portion of the divine. If we take Sri Aurobindo's vision and of this, each individual soul, its origin is in the supermind. We can't say it is some kind of a hallucination or illusion in time and space. It's a truth. All living beings are in their spiritual personality deathless portions of the one person of Purusha. From here comes all this that, you know, we should not hurt or injure others. We should have love for them because every living being, not just human beings, the plant, the tree, the animals, and in a certain sense even mountains and rivers. It's so strange. They give life. The sun gives life. So everything is something or the other of the one divine. He is the eternal master of all manifested existence, lord of the worlds and their creatures. What a beautiful word he uses. Sarva Loka Maheshwara. He is the lord of all the worlds and their creatures. He is the omnipotent originator of all actions, not bound by his works. And to him go all action and effort and sacrifice. This is the divine. Not like I may have my own imagination of the divine. Mother says many people just conceive of me by their imagination. Even today I was hearing something, mother will punish. I said, you just flabbergasted. Mother herself has corrected it. People quote me and say, mother will punish, mother will punish. Frankly, mother will punish. Who will redeem? What does Sri Aurobindo say in Maheshwari? That is Maheshwari. Even a punishments are not a punishment. Even a rejections are not a denial, but only a postponement. But people have these ideas. So we must have a clear conception of what is this divine to whom we are turning and talking to. Is it only an image of Krishna with the Bansuri? And that's not what he is referring to. Yes, that is the avatar. But the divine within man, who is he? And who, in this whole world. So our conception and faith must be correct. So he is reorienting our faith. He is the transcendent divine. He descends as the avatar. You see, he is beyond all and yet he assumes the form of animal and man. He is manifest by his power in the vibhuti. It is he who works in the vibhutis and exalted men and we whom we look up and you know they are beyond the frame of humanity. It is he who expresses himself. He is the Godhead secret in every human being. All the gods whom men worship are only personalities and forms and names and mental bodies of the one divine existence. Therefore, through any and every god we can go to him. But the moment we say only this god is the supreme, we are creating a problem. See, in Sanatana Dharma we have, you may worship Ganpati as the highest, okay. But the moment you say Ganpati or Shiva is greater than others or is the only path, you're creating a problem. So Sanatana Dharma evolved in such a way that, okay, you have your own path and for you that is highest. Ekam sad vipra bahudha vadanti. There is one truth, but the wise call by many names. Even a stone you can pick up and worship as the highest. Even a plant you can worship as the highest. The sky, the sun, doesn't matter. So that's what is being, that all the different gods, all the different forms are forms and name of the one divine. So it's not just polytheism or monotheism. It uniquely blends the two. So this is what he is revealing to us. Then from there we go to the pure self and he speaks of on page 579, the three status. There are always, page 579, the passage starts. There are always these three eternal states of the divine being. There is always and forever. So now why is he emphasizing always? They are at once together. It's not either transcendent or universal. It's one divine who is simultaneously all these three. Just as we can be simultaneously a quiet witness as well as active, as well as playing certain roles. All these together. Which part I put forward in a certain moment is a different thing. But potentially I am all the three together. Similarly, the divine is simultaneously all these three, except that I do it in unconsciously, he is fully conscious. This is the difference. There is always and forever this one eternal, immutable self-existence, which is the basis and support of existent things. There is always and forever. See, why he is emphasizing always and forever? Always may mean that, well, sometimes he is this and sometimes he is that. But always, but forever, simultaneously they are all three together. There is always and forever this transcendent divine who can be both of these others. So we have the Shara, Akshara and Purushottama. And all these three are together. Okay. Page 580, the passage starts here. It is possible by drawing back from the lower turn of his nature in which man now lives to awake from this light that is darkness. What a description. This world, light that is darkness. Logic and reason, this light that is darkness. He says it's always possible to draw back, to awake from this light that is darkness and live in the luminous truth of the eternal and immutable self-existence. So when we do that, what is the result? Man then is no longer bound up in his narrow prison of personality. You are not identified with your personality. And therefore you don't take the stain of sin and suffering or of virtue and goodness. It works both ways. You can't say that, you know, I don't take responsibility for my sins and sufferings, but I am responsible for the goodness and virtuosity. You are bound. There is a pair. Get rid of one, get rid of the other. Buy one, it's an old scheme. The other will come. If you want to be good, you have to be responsible for the evil done. If you want to be very good in human eyes, then you are simultaneously, you have to bear. So this is how the law of karma operates actually. It is the ego. If we act under the stress of the ego, the law of karma affects us. Because it has to teach us to go beyond. That's why there is no law of karma for animals, incidentally. There is no law of karma for the tiger who devours a deer. Or commits, or the crocodile who stealthily swallows up a deer. It doesn't. There is no law of karma. There is no ego, there is no intent. But man only has the law of karma as an evolutionary mechanism. If we identify with the ego, I am a good guy, okay, law of karma acts on you. You want to reap rewards of your goodness, then the evil done also will come back to you. But if you are free in the spirit, in the divine, then you are free from the law of karma and you can continue to act much more powerfully because the divine is now acting in you. This is the fundamental truth. So he says, man then is no longer bound up in his narrow prison of personality. Then we can't say, oh, I am somebody great and, you know, take out your card, I am Mr. So-and-so. All this goes. You can't keep both. You can't identify yourself as someone or something and then don't be responsible for your karma. But if you are a child of the Divine Mother, then you are free from all karma because none of this, it is only an outer device. People may think of you as this or that, but you are not identified with that. Then you are free. Man then is no longer bound, no longer sees himself as this little I that thinks and acts and feels and struggles and labors for a little. He is merged in the vast and free impersonality of the pure spirit. He becomes the Brahman, Brahma Bhuta. He knows himself as one with the one self in all things. He is no longer aware of ego, no longer troubled by the dualities, no longer feels anguish of grief or disturbance of joy. He is no longer shaken by desire. He is no longer troubled by sin or limited by virtue. So these things will come. And they will enter into the vast ocean of his calm. That's how it is described, the Gyan Yoga in the Gita, Sankhya Gyan Yoga, that Apurya Madham Achalam Pratishtam. All these things will happen. People will, they have their mind, they will look at it, judge it. But as far as you are concerned, you have become vast and all these things go and enter there. And then finally, page 581. A perfect perfection comes only by living in the Supreme and the Whole Divine. This is the key of perfection, Vishwabindu says. Living inside in the impersonal self will not bring perfection. It will bring freedom. Action is going on, you are inwardly free. Living in the transcendent throws you out of cosmos and creation. That is another kind of freedom, but not perfection. There is a difference between liberation and perfection. The yogas till now, the yogas of the Upanishads bring liberation. Even the Gita at the end takes us to liberation. Now this is Shorvindo's, because Gita has laid the foundation for what is going to come in the life divine. So Shorvindo gives us, talks about perfection. The Gita doesn't speak of perfection. But perfection is not possible unless we live simultaneously in this threefold vision of the divine. So he says, a perfect perfection, again we see inverted commas. You won't find this word in the slokas. A perfect perfection comes only by living in the supreme and the whole divine. Then the soul of man is united with the Godhead of which it is a portion. Then it is one with all beings in the self and spirit, one with them both in God and in nature. Then it is not only free but complete, plunged in the supreme felicity, ready for its ultimate perfection. What that ultimate perfection is, will come later. But toward the end in this chapter, what is the state of such a person? He sees all in God. And God in all. So he's not worried, afraid of storms or anything. He sees Mother Kali is coming in the storms. Grace is pouring through the rain. Everything is contained within him. He sees all things as Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the name of the divine, immanent divine. Vasu, the covering, the outer aspects, the indwelling Godhead, Deva, who dwells within everything, is Vasudeva. The word Vasudeva is the indwelling Godhead. That's why when the mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which is Narad's mantra, which Mother says is very powerful mantra. So it's about invoking the Godhead indwelling in every creature. He is delivered from the dualities of joy and grief, from the pleasant and the unpleasant, from desire and disappointment, from sin and virtue. This is the state in which such a person arrives. Then the new movement begins. This is the solution, this the salvation, this the perfection that I offer to all those who can listen to a divine voice within them and are capable of this faith and knowledge. What is the qualification needed for the yoga? Faith in this possibility. Willingness to live according to that. To listen to their own inmost heart. But to climb to this preeminent condition, the first necessity, the original radical step, is to turn away from all that belongs to your lower nature. That's why the first step is Jnana Yoga, Sankhya Yoga. That first we must find that. Otherwise it will just remain a mental idea. I am living according to Mother, but I have not even discovered her within me. So first should be to discover that divine presence within and in this whole universe. And fix yourself by concentration of the will and intelligence on that which is higher than either will or intelligence, higher than mind and heart and sense and body. So first practice is to remain turned within and above. First practice. And this is not to be done necessarily only when we are sitting, walking, speaking, communicating, eating, drinking, being outside with friends, alone. Consciousness will turn within and above. So all these things which draws out, pull us out, we have to learn to disengage and go within and above. This is the first movement. This is not the total truth, but first movement, because we have to discover that. Turn your will inward, beyond the heart. That means will should not be subject to my emotions, my impulses, my desires, my mental ideas. That's what is meant. The will must go seeking for the divine. What you want of me? What my family wants of me? What I want, my ego wants of me? What I desire and demand must completely cease. The will must go in search of what the Mother wants of me. That's what he is reminding us. Lift it upward beyond the mind and its associations and attachments, and its bounded wish and thought and impulse. Arrive at something within you that is eternal, ever unchanged, calm, unperturbed. What will be the sign that we are near it? Because we will enter into this state. Ever calm, unperturbed, a new knowledge, wise tranquility, tranquil knowledge begins to pour from the heart or from above. Next passage, page 582. Thus, to impersonalize your being is not possible so long as you nurse and cherish and cling to your ego or anything that belongs to it. So basically, desires, passions, ego, if we cling to it, then forget about it. The two don't go together. So few lines below. Desire brings always confusion of mind and limitation of the will. An egoistic and distorted view of things. A failure and clouding of knowledge. Desire and its preferences and violences are the first strong root of sin and error. So desire is the one which distorts. So this world is not illusion. It is a manifestation of the divine, but Mr. Desire and Mr. Ego are always busy distorting the original impulse. If you want to correct the world, correct this problem inside. Then yes, in the divine action in the world. But first, desire and ego must go. If they are there operating inside, divine will get distorted. So we'll only add to the distortion, not to the rectification. Page 583, second line. Desire is the chief enemy of spiritual perfection. Period. This is something which should be imprinted here. Slay then desire. What powerful. Before you slay your enemies, Arjun, slay desire. Put away attachment to the possession and enjoyment of the outwardness of things. Separate yourself from all that comes to you as outward touches and solicitations, as objects of the mind and senses. We don't have to leave anything outwardly, but inwardly, the sting of desire. Oh, I want this. Oh, then the reactions of pleasure and pain. That must go. When we get something, take it as gift. If you don't get, don't repent and start grieving. That's what it meant, very simply. Cast away liking and disliking. Destroy preference and hatred. Root out shrinking and repugnance. Let there be a calm indifference to these things and to all the objects of desire in all your nature. Look on them with the silent and tranquil regard of an impersonal spirit. What will be the sign? The result will be an absolute equality and the power of unshakable calm that the universal spirit maintains in front of its creations. Facing ever the manifold action of nature, look with equal eyes, receive with an equal heart and mind all that comes to you, success and failure, honor and dishonor, the esteem and love of men, and the scorn and persecution and hatred, every happening that would be to others a cause of joy and every happening that would be to others a cause of sorrow. Look with equal eyes on all persons, on the good and the wicked, on the wise and the foolish, or on the Brahmin and the outcast. So here, Brahmin has nothing to do with Pandey or Sharma or Mishra. There was no surname anywhere in the Bhagavatam or anywhere. It has to do with the man of knowledge. That's it. A Brahmin is a seeker after knowledge. That's all that it meant. Meet equally all men, whatever their relations to you, friend and ally, neutral and indifferent, opponent and enemy, lover and hater. And I think if we can just do this much, it's a great release. You must fix not on these differences, few lines below, but on that which is the same in all, on the one self which all are, on the divine in every creature, and on the one working of nature, which is the equal will of God. Page 584, we'll read this then stop. action will still be done in you. You don't have to shun action. Anyway, the action will go on, whether you like it or not like it. From morning till night, we are engaged in some action or the other. Even a stone which is lying is having an action. Only it is having an action in an inert way. So action will happen because nature is always at work. But you must learn and feel that yourself is not the doer of the action. That's the beauty. And then what is the next step of discovery? That the doer is the sole lord, the lord of nature. Because this is half truth. First step is you are not the doer. You can't take credit. Nature is doing everything. And this is so simple, logical. If somebody achieves, say in an examination, does very well. Now why did he, could he do it? Because he had the intelligence. Who gave the intelligence? Did he do some magic? No, intelligence was there in nature. He received as a gift, whether through genetics or whatever. And that's how he is. So we are not the doer is pure, simple reason will tell us we are not the doer. Nature is doing, so what are we doing? We are giving consent. Same intelligence I may use to rob a bank, swindle someone like Shakuni, or the same intelligence I may use to make truth win like Krishna. That's the only difference. Both are, you know, endowed with intelligence. So yourself is not the doer. Last paragraph on page 584. If you can do this, then you will find yourself uplifted into a great release, a wide freedom and deep peace. Then you will be aware of God and immortal, possessed of your dateless self-existence, independent of mind, life and body, sure of your spiritual being, untouched by the reactions of nature, unstained by passion and sin and pain and sorrow. So first step is disengage from the ego and desires operating system, DOS. That's how I put it. Our operating system is DOS, desire operating system. Based on that we judge, based on that we act, based on that we are happy or sad. This system, first we have to learn to disengage from. Like you give a computer for upgrading. You can't say I'll keep on doing while you upgrade. If I have to upgrade, let's my car into from the petrol to the electrical or solar, I have to leave it for some time. I can't say I'll keep the car running. Mechanic, please sit with me and do it. He will say, sir, sorry, you have to leave it. Stay quiet. You read a book or come back to me after 2 hours, I would do it. So first step is this step where we disengage with desire and ego. Step back inside. Step back above. Mother in volume 3 writes about stepping back. See how transient, this is where all this comes from. How foolishly we are engaged with life, chasing desires that hurt us in the end. And turn this will inward to find the divine and to listen to his will in us. When we do that, slowly the disengagement will be complete. As the disengagement is complete, action will continue. But we will no more be the doer, and inwardly we will be in a state of calm, joy, peace, and new wisdom will begin to awaken in us. Okay, so we stop here. We'll continue on 3rd June. Probably should be the last session, so probably